leaders, sometimes it feels like we have to know everything about everything. Like the team is looking to us to have all of the answers, and that can become a really overwhelming thing for most of us as we progress in our careers and as we move kind of up the ladder and up the responsibilities, is feeling like you have to have all the answers and know everything about everything. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So I am so honored to have Ivan Heiberg here with me, who's the CEO of Sons of Norway, which is a fraternal life insurance company. Ivan is also the Honorary Consul General to Norway, which is just super cool, meaning he reports to the Ambassador of Norway. So I'm so excited to just have you share your journey and share some of this wisdom, because I think you've had a very unique, you know, life and career that some of the people that have been on the podcast haven't had. So you bring kind of a different flair to the discussion. So thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Jamie. Pleasure to be here.
I would love to just start with, you know, we don't do bios. I just want you to just kind of talk about, how do you get to be CEO, which people are always curious about, but how do you get to be the Honorary Consul General too? Like, what has been your journey to kind of get you where you're at today?
Well, great question. Very few believe this when I first say it, but I ended up in this situation due to basketball.
All things. All right.
And growing up in Norway, I played basketball for a couple club teams. I played for the national junior team and always had this desire to come to the U.S., to motherland of basketball, to come and check that out and try things out on this side of the ocean. And my very dear friend had us geared up to play for one of the biggest high schools in Southern California. And at age 16, I was very unsure whether I was ready to leave the country. Mm-hmm. And so I decided not to go with him. Within weeks of him leaving, I regretted not tagging along. And it got to the point where I said, this is it. I got to figure out a way to do this. And as it has, what I learned I needed to do was I needed to figure out a way to go through kind of an official exchange program in order to play basketball. So, and I did it kind of late in the year. I learned that because I wanted to go the following year, they said, we can't guarantee a host family. And if you know anybody in the U.S., we encourage you to make those connections. And my grandmother's second cousin lived in North Dakota. And I met him a few years earlier. They made an offer of coming to stay with them and sent him a letter.
So you went from California to North Dakota as your second option.
Correct. And I remember, and they said, sure, come on over. This would be great. And so I ended up living in Larimore, North Dakota for a year. It was a bit of a culture shock,
I would guess.
I have to admit. Played basketball, but just came to love the Midwest, love the people here. And the longer I stayed here, I went to college here, went to grad school here. The longer I stayed here, I saw the deep-rooted Norwegian connections and how people really have embraced that. And I found myself connecting even more to my own culture that, in many ways, I left behind. Hmm. And so I got involved slowly with some Norwegian organizations. So I was on the board of Norwegian American Chamber of Commerce, local Sons of Norway chapter. And I really had a background. I went to school for business, economics, I was a registered rep, had all my insurance, your 763 licenses. And then all of a sudden, my predecessor, CEO of Sons of Norway, asked me one day if I knew anybody who would be willing to come and take over a director role at Sons of Norway. And I told him, I gave him a few names. Mm-hmm. And finally he said, what about you, Ivan? And I said, you know what? I appreciate you asking, John. I said, I have a great thing going right now working with families, small, mid-sized companies as clients. I said, however, this is probably the only other thing that I would consider due to the Norwegian connection.
Yep.
and the culture. And so I ended up joining Sons of Norway after a lot of soul searching, but felt this was the right thing to do. Never regretted that. And spent several years as a director at Sons of Norway before my predecessor resigned, moved on. It was time for him to retire, actually. And the board went on a national search, and they thought at the time that after, you know, weeding through 70-some applicants, that we'll give this young Norwegian a shot at being CEO. Wow. And that happened in 2009. So wow. It's been a wonderful, wonderful ride. I have to say, great people, great members, fantastic staff, and couldn't be more pleased.
Great values, I have to attest to that, which I think, you know, is probably yep. part of what drew you to it, is
absolutely.
You get to live those values out
yep.
in the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also brought up the Consul General role, mm-hmm. and Norway used to have what they call a career consulate in Minneapolis up until about 2008, which means that there are diplomats from Norway that's part of the Foreign Service mm-hmm. that get stationed around the world that have been here since, you know, for decades, frankly. Mm-hmm. And the decision was made to close the consulate here, which was not popular mm-hmm. in certain
yeah.
certain circles. but they did create kind of a hybrid consulate with some paid staff. And then the first Honor Consul General was actually here, was actually Walter Mondale.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm filling some big shoes,
yeah.
no doubt, there. And then there was Gary Gandrud, and then I was appointed in 2015 after a process I had no idea was as rigorous as it was, with the background checks and the process that involved the U.S. State Department, all the way up to the Prime Minister's office in Norway before being appointed. But I have to say, in addition to Sons of Norway, really representing my own home country mm-hmm. here in Minnesota and the Midwest is a huge, huge honor. And, you know, developed a very close working relationship with the Norwegian ambassador who is, you know, going to be in town in a couple of weeks again. For
very
the
cool.
U.S. Norway, no, Human Rights, I'm sorry, Forum, and have a meeting with
wow.
Governor Waltz. So helping him arrange and set that up right now.
And that's just so, I think most people don't really have line of sight into that whole world, right? I mean, even if they are Norwegian or they have that background, is first off, very, very high population here in the Midwest,
correct.
Specifically
yep.
in Minnesota. But having that tie, just fascinating that you can kind of do what you do, but still have the tie back to kind of your roots, I guess
right.
I would call it, and be able to support that in some way and continue the traditions and the right keeping it alive here.
Yep. And you're right. I mean, Minnesota is known to have, according to the past census, about 850,000 people that are self-identified as Norwegians just
wow.
in the state of Minnesota.
Wow.
So, and we're talking north of 5 million in the U.S. alone, which is actually slightly more than the entire population of Norway. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, well, we love it. We love it here. So, you're on the Superpower Success podcast. So,
okay.
one of the questions that we always want to start with is what do you think is a strength, a superpower that has helped you get to where you've gotten in your success?
Well, first off, I never thought, even crossed my mind that I would any kind of superpower. so just want to get that out there. However, one of the things that I think really helped liberate me to a sense was I got to a certain level and just the whole notion of feeling comfortable enough to delegate
mm-hmm.
Work, etc., to staff. Just, I think it was a key element. Not only did it help me take some weight off my shoulders, it helped empower others. I think it helped staff grow
mm-hmm.
And really take on a leadership role. And I think as part of that process, you know, I was starting to recognize and realize that I really can't and probably shouldn't know everything about everything. I think it's impossible for us as humans to know everything about everything. Mm-hmm. However, I think for some time I felt that that was the expectation of me. Perhaps it was a self, you know, imposed mm-hmm. expectation, but I felt that I had to know everything about everything that was sort of under the scope of my job, even as it trickled down.
And I think that's something that most leaders at some point, or just yep. most people in their career, feel that, because there's a little bit of like imposter, like I need to know this because I don't want anyone to know I don't know it kind
Correct.
Of thing, to be able to get to a certain point. Was it a certain point in your confidence, in a certain position, where you're finally, like, the work just becomes so overwhelming that it kind of forced you into, like, I can't know all of this. I can't control all of it. I can't be the only one that has the answers. Like, just for people that are listening that are maybe dealing with this right now, like, what point did you come to that you realized that you needed to not know everything about everything?
I have always been very curious by nature mm-hmm. and inquisitive, often ask questions to understand people, issues, situations. And just a quick story is kind of interesting. Back in high school, when I was 17, coming over from Norway to the U.S., knew the language, but I didn't know the language. Mm-hmm. I knew English a little bit, so I would ask all sorts of questions, and I think some of my friends had a lot of fun with that. So they would tell me things that weren't necessarily accurate just to see where I would go with it. So I was actually, speaking of being vulnerable, I was actually voted the most gullible person in the senior class of the high school, again, because I was inquisitive. But bringing that forth today, I think if there are situations, if there are areas where I don't understand, I found that seeking to understand is the key to achieving some success. In some cases, that's having conversations with subject matter experts, it's bringing in the right consultant, whatever mm-hmm. the case is. Most often, I always, when it comes to staff and employees, I look to hire people that are smarter than me, mm-hmm. That know more than me in certain areas, number one, so they can help the company grow, help us succeed. And it's also gonna help me learn from such subject mm-hmm. matter experts, from such staff that may know about a certain area of our business that I may not be an expert in. So mm-hmm. it's gonna help me grow as well and help, you know, push me in some ways.
Do you remember a certain point where that switched on for you, the fact that you needed to hire smart people around you? Was there a certain point or a catalyst that kind of forced it to happen as you moved up because you couldn't handle everything? Or
I think it had to do with goals that were set, and it was certainly not in my current role, it was in my previous role. Goals being set, and I tried to engage not only, you know, my staff mm-hmm. and helping to solve it and asking them, how are we going to get there? And there were still a lot of questions, I think everybody looking, you know, to me for answers. And I asked the group, I said, well, if we're not sure where to go, who can we bring in mm-hmm. or who can we talk to that can help give us a different perspective? And so I think there was something, and part of it is the inquisitive, I think, nature that I have, seeking to understand, that kind of helped me. And I think it just kind of brought that out as we're trying to solve for how do we reach XYZ goal. And so that's the path I've been on, I think for the past probably 12, 15 years, making sure to bring in people that understand, whether it's commercial real estate, which up until, you know, a few years ago, I knew next to nothing about.
Yeah, and now you've been through, now you have like an MBA in commercial real estate with everything you've
done. Well, I didn't go that far, but again, bringing in the right people. Yeah. And there's so many aspects to it, whether it's, you know, having the right attorney at the table, the right project manager, the right whatever the case is.
And that's one thing that I do see you guys do really well is know where you have your strengths and where you do need that help. And I think it's I think it's more of the culture that you've built, but I think there's some organizations where maybe people don't have that same flexibility to bring in people, and that's a lot of pressure on leaders mm-hmm. to know everything about everything, right? Or feel like they're kind of carrying that burden. What advice would you give to a leader that's kind of in that state right now, where they just, they feel like there's goals, there's things that they can't control, they don't necessarily have the wisdom or the knowledge and experience to fix? What do they do? I mean, I know it's different for every company, but
I would, if you have a mentor or two in your life, I would certainly encourage people to go and seek their advice. Yeah. Trusted advisors, you know, that you have in your inner circle, I would have conversations with them. I think key is to an extent, be vulnerable and be open with yourself and those that you're comfortable with to say, you know, I don't necessarily know all this. What are your thoughts on it? What's your advice? Who do you think I should talk to? And if you're involved in you know, trade organizations or other organizations where you have developed a network, you know, those may be individuals to seek out to have that dialogue with.
No, that's great advice. And we talk about coaches and mentors all the time in here, because it's really a huge part to growing is to have those outside people that kind of aren't in it with you to be able to give you that advice. So I think that's fantastic advice. Where do you see, and do you see this applying to your personal life, or do you think this applies to people's personal lives as well as their professional lives?
I would say both. Absolutely. Yeah. Again, I know next to nothing about a car. I know nothing about fixing stuff around the house. I told my wife when we first met, I said, full disclosure, if you're looking for a handyman, I'm not your guy. However, we now have a guy for just about everything.
Correct.
And I said, you know, I'm okay putting that on the table. A lot of people laugh at it, the way, you know, I share it, but that's the case. I know nothing about what to fix, you know, around the house.
And I'm probably adding more risk to my family by trying to do it myself anyway.
If I don't know how to fix the engine on a car, I have no business trying to fix the engine.
Yeah.
But I know it needs to be fixed, so let's bring the right people to fix that engine.
Yeah, that's a really good point, though. I think we do it in our personal lives probably even better than we do it in our professional lives, because there are just things that it's like, I'm not going to rewire an outlet in my house, right? Like, that's putting my family at risk.
Right.
Like, I'm going to hire someone to do that. So those are easier decisions. But I think when it comes to work, again, we get caught up in this as leaders. I always, there's a great quote, and I'm not going to get it right, but it's just the message I always share with our coaching clients is that leaders are not the ones that have all the answers. They're the people who ask the right questions. And I think it goes back to that word curious that you brought up, is as leaders, we need to be curious about this. And that's how we actually help our people grow, is by asking them questions and having them think differently about their area of expertise versus feeling like we have to have the answers. And I actually think that strangleholds businesses from growing when the leader is the one that needs to have all the answers.
Yep, totally agree.
And so do you see that? How does that work in your organization? How do you coach people, you know, in that space? Clearly, you just surround yourself with smart people in their areas, and then you allow them to make decisions. But do you ever see that struggle with your leaders, or, you know, throughout your career with people that have reported to you, where they get caught in that, I need to know all the answers for this?
I do see that from time to time. One of the things that I've tried to do on a number of occasions is encourage and challenge people to figure out different ways to solve a problem. You know, I think it's so easy to get stuck on doing the same thing the same way that we've always done, which in some cases may take, you know, a certain amount of time to get done. It will cost a certain amount of money, and really challenging people to, you know, is there a way to do this quicker, more efficiently, maybe more cost effective? And I've seen that sort of putting it on the table that they're empowered to, as individuals, to look at this differently and actually come up with solutions is can be incredible. And we've seen some wonderful results.
Which then forces them to ask different questions,
exactly.
Right? It's really the questions you ask force three other questions that they then need to be considering.
Yep.
And it has that trickle-down effect. I think that's fantastic. So because you're kind of curious by nature, right, and I think learning is a big piece of just that continuous learning piece, What do you do personally to learn? I mean, what's kind of your approach to just constantly be learning?
I get involved. I have gotten involved. You know, I mentioned the Norwegian American Chamber of Commerce I've been involved in for many, many years. I joined a group called YPO, Young mm-hmm. President's Organization. It's an incredible organization, and it's worth every penny, assuming that is something that fits you. Mm-hmm. Probably learned more there in the last few years than, you know, the past 15 from peers.
That's awesome.
Their CEOs, executives, etc. You know, going back to the Honorary Consul General role, I've also gotten involved there. Not only involved in the Minnesota Consular Corps, but I also sit on the board for the Consular Corps College in D.C. That's really the umbrella organization for all honorary and diplomatic consuls and you know, for mm-hmm. any country that's stationed in the U.S.
Hmm.
So it's about being involved, and you get to know people at a whole different level.
Yep.
You get to, I wouldn't just say networking with, but you get to know people and also get to see different perspectives. Mm-hmm. And that's how I grow. That's how I learn.
Yeah. I love that idea, because I think a lot of us, and again, advice that we're always giving is, at certain points in your career, you have to change, I would say, the rooms you're in, right? The people that you're around mm-hmm. to be able to get to the next level. And so many of us kind of hang on to those same organizations or those same things we used to do before, or the same ways, and we have to be changing those for us to grow, right? If we're ever the smartest people in the room, we're probably in the wrong room. We need to move to a different room, which is what the YPO and some of those groups are, is I want to be back in the room where I'm not the smartest one in the room, because that's where the learning comes from. So I love that idea. What other just words of wisdom, advice do you give your people, or, you know, just in general, that when you think about your career and your success, anything else that kind of comes to mind?
There have been situations where I've noticed managers or leaders that have not effectively delegated, because again, it goes back to I feel they have.
Mm-hmm.
They have to know everything and do everything. And really tried to work with them to understand that just because you're the leader or manager, department head, doesn't mean you have to be the one doing all these things.
Yeah.
Make sure you tap into you know, the right strengths of mm-hmm. your staff. And we've seen, again, having staff being empowered in a different way, we've seen some incredible results. I would also say, kind of sort of related to the get involved, the networking topic, what I have found is you know, not necessarily if you're a type of a networking event, just running around saying hi to everybody mm-hmm. and trying to shake hands with as many people as possible, but really I would encourage people to try and make meaningful connections.
More intentional.
Be much more intentional.
Yep.
And I found that making meaningful connections with a couple or a few in a setting that you mm-hmm. develop and cultivate over time, it's, you know, it's given me a whole lot more value than, you know, say I met 100 people.
Yeah.
Briefly.
And I think that's good advice for people that don't love networking events either, because there's some people that's scary. It's very draining.
Right. Yep.
But just going in with the intention of just, I'm going to meet a couple people, but get to know them deeper, not just shake a bunch of hands. Yep. I think it makes it less overwhelming, right? It makes the room feel a little bit smaller when you're focusing on that. And then I love the other wisdom around kind of delegation, because I would say this is one of the number one issues that we see with most of our clients is leaders' ability to delegate. And it's twofold in that I think we get accustomed to being the expert in something, and it becomes our worth to the organization. And so when we need to delegate that to someone else, we feel like we're creating a vacuum where we're not going to be as valuable. And the guidance that I would give people that are in that space is the only way that the company grows is for the leaders to be doing different things than they were doing before, mm-hmm. right? Is that constant delegate and elevate approach. And so as leaders, we have to want to step in and try new things and take on new responsibilities, but we can't do that if we're holding on. to everything that we used to do. And we also aren't building the next level of leadership, which is a big gap that I see in a lot of organizations right now, just with the population, the generation changes, is that next level of leadership hasn't been developed and given the experiences and opportunities yet. And there's going to be a void created as people retire. So I love that advice. So if people want to connect with you, they want to get more information, they want to learn more about anything that you're involved in, what's Sons of Norway, what's the best approach?
I would say sonsofnorway.com is our website.
Okay.
Can certainly check that out. And personally, if anyone has any questions, I'm very active on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And that may be...
And we'll include a link to your LinkedIn profile. If people just, I always say, if you're going to reach out listening to a podcast, you have to tell them you listened to this podcast and you were curious, because otherwise people get spammed with LinkedIn messages and things like that. So so we'll include that in the podcast notes. Thanks for taking the time. I mean, clearly you've got like how many, a day job and a night job and a couple of other things going on. So
my
I appreciate you taking the time to share this with us. And I think this is a great reminder for all of us. I don't care what your position is or what your title is, that we've got to get better at being in our strengths and spending more time in there and delegating the things that aren't in that, in our wheelhouse as much, because we're all going to be much more fulfilled that way. And that's really what this whole podcast is about. So to everyone who's listening, just remember that it's another opportunity to really focus in on your strengths to achieve that next level of success, whatever that looks like for you. Thanks, everyone.